Welcome to Unscripted Wrestling, the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast on the Everything Unscripted Network. I'm your humble, gracious host, who also looks like one of the marquee guys here as an Andre the Giant. I am Daniel Hummer. I am here with my co-host, Quinneth. Say hi to the people, Quinneth.
He's not here.
I know. Eric, how you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm good. What color shirt you wearing today?
I have a sweatshirt on.
What color?
Blue.
Okay. And Doug's here. How you doing, Doug?
Good. How are you?
Good. What color underwear are you wearing, Doug?
I think I got the black one. Then.
Okay. Now that we got...
I don't think we ever told Clint the new time.
Huh?
I don't think Clint knows about the new time that we...
Well, you might want to tell him so he gets on. Even though we fought in front of him.
Okay. So tonight we're going to be covering the WWF 1988 main event. This was a big one. This was with Andre the Giant and Hogan, the famous switcheroo with the referees and everything.
There's a lot to get into.
There's a couple matches.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have some questions.
Clint, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Hey, Clint.
How are you? Hey.
I'm well. Clint is here, everybody. So before we dive into it, here's Doug with the plugs.
Okay. We'll do a couple plugs, and then I get something else I want to address at the beginning here. But anyway, listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday, Friday night, Mixler.com/Dirt Sheet Dudes. They can be found on all major podcast platforms. Usually around 10:15, 10:20-ish Eastern time. They will be on tonight, right after wrestling. Listen to us Friday nights, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. You hear that, Clint? 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. So next time you're not late.
Wow, 1 minute late. God.
It's 6:33. Give him a fucking break.
You said I came in the middle of the show.
Yeah, it came in 3 minutes late. We didn't even set the plugs yet.
Anyway, so 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, every Friday night for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. Next week's episode is No Way Out 2004, the Eddie Guerrero Brock Lesnar matchup for the WWF title. So we're going to be talking about in 2 weeks, February 19th, and we actually have a very special poll going on in facebook.com/group/oldschoolwrestling. We're doing an eliminator poll. So we have 16 groups up right now of 5 options. Each group is like their own label group. So you got like a Hulk Hogan group, the Ric Flair group, the Sting group, yada, yada, of like favorite feuds, because we're going to do a feud retrospective in 2 weeks. At 2:30 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow, whoever is in the lead in each one of their respective polls will move on to the next round. It'll be done via lethal lottery. And then, of course, the winners of those will move on into the final poll. And then we'll find out probably by Monday or Tuesday what we're doing on February 19th. All right, tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Here on Mixler.com, or not Mixler.com, on blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted will be another in the ring. It'll be myself versus Eric versus Boxman. Boxman, if you're listening to this, we still need your answers.
Okay. I'll send him a message.
Yeah, send him a message. Yeah, Eric, you handle all boxes. Anyway. But it'll be myself, Eric, and Boxman. Daniel's already come up with the questions, and it's going to be another fun one. I am defending my crown that a lot of people would say, including myself, I stole from Clinton.
Yeah, you're right. You did. You did.
Right. Also, Eric, I believe on Valentine's Day will be Control Chaos?
Yes.
Okay. And that's usually Sundays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And next, or this upcoming Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time here on the same channel, Eric Clinton and I will be on NFL Hard Hits, or have our NFL Hard Hits show, and we will be reviewing this Sunday's Super Bowl.
Awesome.
Now, the thing I wanted to get to, I don't know if everybody heard about Dan, I know you heard about it because I told you. Earlier today, we unfortunately heard the news of the passing of the natural Butch Reed, former Mid-South North American champion, former WCW tag team champion, also known as Hacksaw Butch Reed, the former tag team partner of Ron Simmons and Doom.
Oh, wow.
Passed away.
We're going to have to get Ron Simmons back.
Huh?
I said we're going to have to get Ron Simmons back on the show.
We've never had Ron Simmons on the show. So he passed away at the age of 66 after suffering two heart attacks a couple weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
So,
rest in peace.
So we will be doing a history lesson on him very, very soon. It was between him and Magnum TA in the poll. I think Magnum's winning, but I'm calling an audible. And we're going to do the episode on Butch Reed.
Okay. We can do Magnum next time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much the plan. All right. So RIP Butch Reed.
Yes.
And then Dahama, up to you.
All right. The first ever main event they did on a Friday, right?
Yeah. 31 years or 33 years ago today, by the way.
To this day.
To this day.
On NBC. February 5th in Indianapolis, Market Square Arena.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, gentlemen, the big draw to this thing, which we only get three matches on TV, well, technically two and a half, but the big draw of this thing is Andre and Hulk Hogan, too, right?
Yeah.
So get into a little bit of the background on this whole event before we get started.
You're talking to me, right?
Yeah.
So everybody remembers WrestleMania 3 and the Hogan-Andre match and how that set the indoor attendance record and all that jazz. Well, Vince McMahon saw big money in a rematch, which everybody did, right?
Yeah.
And at the time, NBC was the home of Saturday night's main event. As a matter of fact, they had a Saturday night's main event the month before, actually on January 2nd.
Yes.
So, and, you know, Andre beat up Hogan on that show, right? So, anyway, so NBC actually, Vince figured, okay, well, we want to get the title off of Hogan because we're going to make a brand new transition, which I'll get into in a little bit. We're going to make a brand new transition, so let's get the belt off of Hogan. So they're like, all right, well, where do we put this? Do we put it on pay-per-view, or do we create like an event for it? And then I think Dick Ebersol, who worked for, I believe he had just technically started with NBC, or he had been with NBC for a while. He started with Vince and then got the job at NBC. And then went to just working for Vince, but was also still had the connections at NBC. I don't know how it worked, but Dick Ebersol talked to NBC executives and said, hey, you know, can we get a primetime slot for Hogan versus Andre? NBC saw big money in that. So they said, okay, well, let's do a Friday night. Friday night in prime time. So not the regular 11:30 spot that they would usually get, Because, you know, once every quarter they would play Saturday Night Live. So they get this primetime slot to put this match on there. And this match actually, the Nielsen rating was 15.2. 33 million viewers. 33 million people watch this thing. They, the largest audience to ever watch a televised wrestling match. To this day, records never been broken. And so they also try to figure, all right, well, what else are we going to do, right? Old Macho Man and Honky had a feud. So they're like, all right, well, we'll blow this one off here.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then they're like, all right, well, you know, the tag titles, you know, that feud has to be blown off between the Hart Foundation and Strikeforce. So they put that on there. Now, obviously, the Hart Foundation and Strikeforce got the short end of the stick because they signed off. You're on live television, right? You're on live television, and obviously you know you're going to go over. But instead of either cutting whatever segment you knew was running long short and giving a match that you advertised to the people some time, you fuck up. That even showed back then how much Vince McMahon hated tag team wrestling.
Yeah. And this is two capable-ass tag teams, too. But we'll get into that.
Right. But yeah, so, like, they had six dark matches before the show went on the air, because obviously, you know, you have to have you have to have other matches. I mean, you're not just going to pack people in an arena for a three-match card for 1 hour.
Yeah.
But, see, like, this was the perfect thing, and this was the first of five primetime specials that they did. Okay? Only three were put on television. Or not on television. Only three were live. This one, the one the next year, and then the one in February of 1990, because it was still hot for NBC at the time. And, you know, we talk about the February 23rd, 1991, because we did the watch-along for that last year.
Yeah.
Okay? So, it was still a hot time for the business. And Andre and Hogan, there was no feud any hotter.
Even after WrestleMania.
Because they were still able to keep it going. But the thing is that Andre couldn't work. Yeah. But, yeah, no, this was my fondest memory of this. And what's funny is this is actually my very first wrestling memory. I was less than a year, I think, or less than 2 years at the time.
Yeah.
Right? But all I remember is I'm standing actually at Nana and Baba's house, and they have it on the TV, and I see Hogan crying on the TV about losing his belt. And that's like my first wrestling memory.
Hogan won.
Yeah.
Sure, it wasn't your last.
It was not the first time I've seen him whine, no. That actually started my wrestling fandom, because that's my very first memory. And, you know, Dad was always watching it anyway, and so was Grandpa. And, you know, I had the T-shirt, or, you know, not T-shirts. I had the figures, obviously. The Piledriver album that came out the fall before this.
Yeah, you had that?
Yeah. Well, I had the cassette tape, yeah. Let's see, what else did I have? You know, I had posters. I had a Macho Man bandana that Macho Man autographed and gave to Dad.
Really?
Yeah. It was actually around this time. It actually may have been after this. or whatever. But yeah, it was around this time that it happened. You saw Macho Man in an airport in, I think, in Sarasota or somewhere. And he was Macho Man. He just wanted to get the fuck on the plane. Elizabeth wanted to shop in the gift shop.
Yeah.
And the way Dad tells the story is one of his work buddies says, hey, just so you know, Macho Man Randy Savage is in the gift shop. I goes, oh, cool. But he's like, but then this guy also says to Dad, he goes, but he's getting pissed because people keep coming up to him. He goes, oh, crap. So he goes and he sees Elizabeth shopping in there and he sees Macho Man looking at his watch. Right? Typical husband.
Yeah.
And he goes up to Macho Man and he goes, I'm sure too many people have already asked you this and I'm sure you're getting upset, but can I have your autograph? And Macho Man takes a bandana out of his bag, signs it. Here you go. He goes, okay, thank you. And Dad just walked away. Didn't ask for a picture or anything. Well, because really, not everybody carried cameras with them. Like, at those times, you know, there were no cell phones. So
yeah.
Camera phones. Yeah, I didn't get a picture or anything. Just got an autograph. Came home, gave the bandana to me.
Awesome.
It might actually sit. If you still have your... if we still have that toy bin back at Mom's house, it's probably in that toy bin. Unless she did something to fucking get rid of it.
You think so?
We should still have it. I still had it at least like 8 years ago.
Yeah, the dark matches on this card are interesting. Axe of Demolition defeated Strongman Ken Patera.
Which there actually was a feud going on at the time with Demolition and Ken Patera and Billy Jack Haynes. All right, so Axe and Smash of Demolition, who were heels at the time, they were managed by Mr. Fuji, they loved picking on Brady Boone. Now, Brady Boone is the actual, I don't know if he's the actual cousin or if he's was the storyline cousin of Billy Jack Haynes. But Billy Jack got upset. Billy Jack and Ken Patera are both from Portland, so they had that. They basically formed a tag team because they're both Portland boys. And this match was actually supposed to be a tag team match, but it was booked stupid because they were supposed to do this match somewhere else like the night before, but only Smash and, it wasn't even Billy Jack. Billy Jack no-show. So then Junkyard Dog had to take Billy Jack's place. So Billy Jack was teaming with Patera. But this was supposed to be a tag match, but Smash and JYD couldn't make the flight or something.
Now, the second match, this one stands up to me. This is the second dark match. Jake Roberts and Harley Race. Clint, do you think this should have made the main show?
Okay. I liked it more, probably. I mean, I didn't really, the only thing I watched other main events is what they have on the network. To tell you the truth, the three matches on there. So I know nothing about like the dark matches. If you know, they can't give you a clear opinion of it.
Oh no, I know. We haven't seen these matches either. I was just wondering, based on the two names, you know, because it's such big names, Jake Roberts and Harley Race.
I would put them on the main show too.
They should have at least taped it on prime time.
I mean, those are two big level performers. I know.
That's what I'm saying. Is that like the majority of these matches, if they were going to be shown, I mean, and I get it. You have to keep the live crowd interested until Hogan and them are ready to come out.
Yeah.
But you could have kept the cameras rolling for prime time.
Yeah, and why not even? I mean, Ron Bass and Coco Beware is a dark match, but is Jake Roberts and Harley Race?
Jake Roberts on Harley Race should have been on the main show.
It should have been a program.
Yeah. Also, here the British Bulldogs taking on the Islanders, which was a feud at the time. Because the Islanders' dog, Nat Matilda, they're the Bulldogs' mascot.
Yeah.
Like, That could have been on the main show, or again, that could have been, well, that could have been taped for primetime. Duggan and the Gang. I mean, everything that we see on here should have and could have been taped.
Except for Ron Bass and Coco Beware.
I hear that.
Coco really wasn't a bad worker.
Yeah, but he makes a little more sense on a dark match than your top tag team. Or an upcoming
Or even
star.
Warrior and Sika could have been the dark match, because nobody really knew who Warrior was at the time.
No. He was just coming into his own. Starting to.
Yeah.
All right. So then we get to the main card. Randy Savage and Honky Tonk Man. Eric, what did you think of this match?
I thought it was a pretty solid match. I mean, Honky Tonk is, I mean, Macho Man's a legend in itself, so. How long, it was like what? It was the longest, it was like 10 minutes, right?
The longest match, no, it was like 8 minutes and 20 seconds.
Well, technically it was the longest because the main event got cut out.
Yeah, because it.
Oh, no, Hogan.
How long was the main event? Even though it wasn't on the network, technically.
Yeah, because they gave Strikeforce and the Hearts 10 minutes, but I think we only saw like 3 minutes of that on television. Because then they cut. Because
yeah.
They had to cut to Crybaby bitching about losing his title.
Yeah. Is that why only 3 minutes was on the network?
NBC
basically went into Vince's ear. Somebody at NBC went into Vince's ear and said, all right, we got to cut. Or we got to cut. I think what happened was they thought they were going to get the whole match on TV.
Yeah.
Ah.
But then NBC
said,
we're going to cut it.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Because
okay.
They would have timed it better if they knew that, you know, it was going to go off at a certain time. So maybe Vince thought that they were going to show the whole thing. But then again, he really didn't care about it anyway. He went to talking to Baldy Flatscalp about him losing his title.
Exactly.
Interesting here because Honky Tonk Man, Jimmy Hart with him and Peggy Sue, right?
Yeah.
The Peggy Sue, Sensational Sherry.
Yeah.
Dressing up as Peggy Sue.
Well, the interesting thing about the Peggy Sue character is that it was Sensational Sherry, especially here. But when she couldn't go and they needed Peggy Sue at ringside, they would usually just put the dress and the wig on Jimmy Hart.
Yeah. The other interesting thing is here is who they're against, Randy Savage. And you flip over a couple years, and Sherry ends up with Savage, you know, again.
Not even a couple of years, like a year and a half later.
Yeah, round up, it's a couple of years. So Randy Savage, so it's kind of poetic justice here.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy to think what they're all doing right now. Sherry's just dancing around in a blonde wig with Honky Tonk Man, but in a year and a half, she's in the biggest program.
Right. Because, and also to this match here and the WrestleMania 4 match against Beefcake, I think the WrestleMania 4 match against Beefcake was her last appearance as Peggy Sue because she was the WWF Women's Champion at the time.
Right. They could get away with that stuff back then.
What?
Just putting a wig on someone, it's a whole different person?
Yeah. Here's the funny thing. Unless you subscribe to Dave Meltzer's newsletter,
you don't know shit.
You don't know a damn thing. And even like back then, Dave Meltzer did those newsletters in '88 on a typewriter. You can hardly read typewriters. Okay? They're shitty. Because, like, when you have to backtrack, like, if you have to erase or whatever, like, the ink on those damn things are horrible.
Oh, this is a really good thing.
I've never seen one.
Have you ever seen a typewriter?
Yeah. Mom used to have one. Before we were allowed to have a computer, I used to actually have to do my type up papers on a typewriter. Yeah, tell me about it. Dad was cheap. And the only reason why we got a computer is because Sharon got a new one, so she gave us her old one. All right. So, but yeah, like if you knew, like unless you read the newsletter, you didn't know this shit. Because even then, like hotlines were, I mean, the WCW like had their hotline or whatever.
Yeah, but that's a lot.
Yeah. So, yeah, you didn't know that shit. And like I said, I've got a couple. I've either got newsletters from 87 or 88. And they're, you know, like, you can barely fucking read them. Okay? Which sucks because I paid, like, $40 for them. But he didn't start using an actual computer till like, 1992. Yeah.
But,
He's an idiot.
Get back to the match. Randy, Clintus, what was your thoughts on this?
I thought it was an okay match. I mean, nice opening story. The action was good. I wasn't a big fan of the count-out finish. You figure that if you're going to be on prime time, you don't want like a count. You want like a straight-up winner. But overall, it was okay.
I mean, the finish to everything here was fucky.
Right. But let me just kind of explain why they went with this finish, right?
Go ahead.
If you listen to the Honky Tonk Man, Macho Man was going to go over here. Like, they wanted Macho Man to win the Intercontinental title back. Honky said no. He said, I'm not doing the job. If you listen to Bruce Pritchard, they just needed kind of a blow off
for the WrestleMania shit,
before,
right?
WrestleMania, because Savage was going to be thrown into the title picture.
He was going to win the world title.
Yeah.
That makes a little more sense.
I'd believe Bruce Pritchard over the Honky Tonk Man any day. Even though I really don't trust people that suck McMahon off. But I would believe Bruce Pritchard over the Honky Tonk Man. So it kind of had to happen this way because, again, if you're building Macho Man up for a title shot, you really want him to do a job to somebody that thinks he's Elvis? Yeah, you do, or yeah, you see my point?
No, I see your point.
No.
To me, it doesn't make – it wouldn't – Honky Tonk thing makes no fucking sense, because why would they even give Savage the Intercontinental title if they're about to give him the world title? I mean, I know they do it with Ultimate Warrior later on. Obviously, they're not doing that here.
Well, they did it with Ultimate Warrior because they didn't want the Ultimate Warrior to drop a title.
Yes. So, yeah, I think Honky Tonk's full of shit. Would you say Honky Tonk's in his prime here, Doug?
As a draw, yeah. He had so much heat because he had Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart is a cyst on the sack.
Yeah.
Okay? He is such an annoying little man. And I actually, to be honest with you, I mean that in a good way. Eric, you know, we met Jimmy Hart.
Yeah. I know you talked to him. I don't know if I don't remember if I talked to him.
Anyway, well, I tried to give Eric some spotlight here.
Sorry.
He's still too busy dreaming about a girl that likes UFC.
Oh my God, stop.
Anyway,
it's Amanda Nunes, isn't it?
No, he's finally going to admit
we're not going to
Rousey.
God.
So anyway, so
But, like, the thing with Jimmy Hart is that, like, Jimmy Hart knew how to get his guys heat because Jimmy Hart wouldn't get himself involved. Even if his guys were capable of winning the match by themselves, when he was with Earthquake, he would only let Earthquake wrestle the match by himself for 30 seconds. Once somebody threw one punch at Earthquake, Jimmy Hart's up on the apron. It's just like, motherfucker, let's see if this asshole can work before you get involved in his match.
Yeah.
Let him take one punch. I mean, he's a big fat guy. I mean, he should be able to take more than just one punch.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no. I mean, Honky was at his peak here as a draw.
Kenneth, what are your thoughts on Randy Savage as a performer here?
I mean, Randy's is like always like one of my, I guess, favorites because I love his promos. He was an excellent promo, especially with Miss Elizabeth by his side. I enjoy watching him in the ring as well. So, yeah, he was like one of my favorites. But, yeah, I realized I didn't really start watching wrestling until about the 90s. So all this old stuff is adjusting to me.
Gotcha.
And I'll go back and watch all the classics like that.
Yeah, no, I feel that, especially as a young man myself. There's a lot to go through. But, Eric, do you think Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth were the it couple of WWE?
Yeah, just watching that back, it just felt right. It just felt like they're a real couple.
I agree.
It did heartwarming. It felt heartwarming watching that, especially him carrying him on her shoulder.
Those were the days, Doug. I miss those days.
Me too.
And it kind of makes me sad seeing that because they're both gone and they didn't get to live a life together.
Well, I mean, they were divorced in 92.
Oh.
Cared for her deeply, I heard, though.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he was one of the reasons why she came to WCW. I mean, he called her.
Yeah.
He called her and said, hey, you know, you want to come on and do this and, you know, do this thing, you know, team up with Hulk and I again. Because she was still friends with Hulk's wife at the time. So, I mean, she had first brought it up to him because they were going to bring Linda on TV. And then Bischoff realized, I don't want people to stop watching my program, so we'll leave Hulk's wife at home, but we'll bring the attractive one, Elizabeth, on TV. I mean, well, it's easy. Hulk's ugly wife, Savage's beautiful ex-wife.
Wait, who's Hulk's wife? Is it
Linda?
One that's still around. She's not together with him anymore, though, right?
No, they divorced in, like, '07, I think. Elizabeth, the funny thing is that Elizabeth, and Bret Hart has actually said that Elizabeth was too nice to be in the wrestling business.
Yeah, I mean, she always seemed like a sweetheart.
Yeah. Oh, that's a huge crush on her.
That's why I think it was awesome what he got with Sherry, because that's the opposite. That's polar opposites.
Yeah, but it was fun to watch because with Elizabeth, like, nobody wanted to see her bump.
Yeah, well, no, there's no reason.
Because, like, she looks so fragile, right?
Yeah.
Sherry, everybody wanted to see her get knocked on her ass because Sherry could take it.
Yeah, she was tough.
Yeah. There was one time Sherry actually was supposed to slap Elizabeth on TV. Really?
Or
not on TV. I don't think it was on TV. It was on a...
There was a spot they were going to include on the house shows.
Yeah.
When she and Randy were working with Dusty and Sapphire. And she got told... Bruce Prichard came up to her and said, just so you know, you're slapping Elizabeth tonight. And she goes, fuck you. She goes, I ain't doing that. Bruce's like, why not? She goes, Randy will kill me. She goes, I have to ride in the car with that guy. And I'm not doing it. So they got brought into Vince's office. And Vince is like, all right, Sherry, smack her. Just the hall back. Just hit her. And
that's the weirdest. That's impressive.
And Sherry's just like, I'm not doing it. And Randy's just like, oh, yeah, hit her. And Elizabeth's just standing there just like, just hit me. I mean, Jesus Christ. So Sherry's just like, no. But Sherry just half-assed hit her because she was afraid. She wasn't afraid of what Vince was going to do to her. She was afraid of what Randy was going to do to her. And Vince is just like, no, you got to do it again. You got to do it harder.
This was in a room?
Yeah, in his fucking office.
Oh, my God.
And, it was just, I mean, I felt bad for Sherry. Hearing the story, I felt bad for Sherry. Because there was a no-win situation. Because if she would have hit Elizabeth too hard, Randy would have decked her.
Well, he was very protective, from what I've heard.
Some would say overprotective, but I think if you had... Here's my feeling on it.
I know what you're gonna say.
It just goes to show how much he loved her. Because when you have Elizabeth, and Elizabeth was gorgeous, right? Anybody... anybody would think that. And like... When you have a gorgeous wife or a gorgeous girlfriend, if you have a gorgeous girlfriend, and you see guys just kind of walk up to her and just kind of start talking to her and flirting with her, you automatically feel insecure. And that makes you think,
yep.
Oh my God, what if she decides to leave me for this asshole? So that's why he wouldn't let anybody talk to her, is because he was afraid that...
And he knew the boys, too. I mean, there's a lot you could say about the boys, but they're not the most, let's say, classy bunch sometimes. And I'm not trying to talk shit about the locker room. But the boys were the boys, you know? And I'm sure he's been in car rides with a lot of guys that have talked about a lot of stuff. So, of course he doesn't want them.
Well, can you imagine, for an example, the Bulldogs were notorious rivers, right?
Yeah.
Can you imagine Dynamite and Davey trying to pull something on her? And here's the thing, and I would not put it past them. They used to give X-Lax and laxatives to their dog. All right? To make her shit, and then they would put it in somebody else's hotel room.
No.
Okay? So they were horrible.
Well, Dynamite was horrible. Dynamite's known as a world-class asshole. Maybe not so much.
But he went along with it. So I'm just saying is that, like, with that being said, so I can understand Randy being overprotective because he loves her and he didn't want her to be exposed, even though she's in the wrestling business. Let's face it, the only reason why she was in the wrestling business is so she could travel with him in his mind. The only reason why he let her in the business is so she could be on the road with him. So he didn't have to leave her at home.
Yeah. How many stars would you give this out of 5, Gwyneth?
I'll say 3.
Eric?
I agree with that. I thought it was a better match than Andre the Giant. So, could they have gone longer? Yeah, but I thought it was a solid match.
I'd say 3.5.
I'll probably agree with you and say 3.5, but Moving on, the reason we're all here, the meat and potatoes of the event. Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan, too. Andre, obviously there's some shiesty stuff going on. He's got Ted DiBiase and Virgil with him. Set the scene for us a little bit, Doug.
Okay. Talked earlier on about the WrestleMania 3 match and their controversial count, which Andre thought he won the title, but he didn't. He hadn't had a rematch yet. Well, first of all, from the end of WrestleMania 3 till about a couple weeks before Survivor Series 87, Andre was off filming a movie, Princess Bride. Which, if anybody, if you guys have not seen that movie, I do recommend watching it. It's an awesome movie. Very heartwarming. Anyway, so he comes back, wins the match at Survivor Series. All the while, Ted DiBiase debuts. And Ted DiBiase comes out on WWF television and says, I'm going to buy the World Wrestling Federation title. Because it's at every man has his price, right? So he doesn't want to win it in a ring. He just wants to buy it because that's his moniker. He gets whatever he wants just by buying the damn thing.
Yeah.
Hogan said no. So he buys the contract of Andre the Giant from Bobby the Brain Heenan. And he gets the match signed. They do the contract signing at the 1988 Royal Rumble. Gets the match signed, and Andre basically says to DiBiase, I will deliver, because DiBiase asked him, will you deliver to me the WWF title? He goes, yeah, I will. And I'm going to hunt your head, Hogan. So basically, Andre was going into this match not to be the champion, but to win the title and then surrender it to DiBiase.
That was known information before the match.
Yeah, it was. Like, he had basically said it, that he was going to win the title and give it to DiBiase, which everybody acted stupid when it happened. And I'm thinking, well, again, watching this now and knowing the buildup, I'm thinking, I'm like, he did say it on television he was going to do this.
It seemed like a surprise shock, though, what they were trying to do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like, they seemed shocked that he actually did it.
Yeah.
But it's just like, and because then, like, the next couple of weeks on Primetime Wrestling, when they would talk about this, because they showed it 2 weeks in a row on Primetime, Bobby Heenan had even said, Andre said that he was going to sell the title to DiBiase once he won. He goes, so you're telling me that the WWF couldn't go up to him?
What the hell? Right.
So Andre couldn't go up to the WWF and go, or the WWF couldn't go up to Andre and go, you can't do that. If you win the title, you either have to keep it or whatever. Mr. DiBiase cannot win the title by buying it from you. But nobody said that to him. So, like, it just it made the whole thing, again, like when you're a kid and you really don't understand it, it's cool.
Yeah.
But watching it back now, it's just like, you know, Bobby Heenan, even though he's an asshole, he makes a good point.
Yeah.
They knew 3 weeks beforehand that if he won the title, he was going to sell it to DiBiase. If that's against the rules, you should tell him. And then you have Gorilla Monsoon telling Heenan, oh, that's not the WWF's responsibility. Andre should have read the rule book. There is no fucking rule book.
There's imaginary wrestling rules.
Yeah. I mean, finally, they had Daniel Bryan write a rule book like 4 years ago. But still, like, yeah, it made no sense. Or it makes no sense now.
No. Prentice, what was your thoughts on this match?
Well, like I always wanted to, I heard about the rematch, but I was never able to find it until now. So watching it and then knowing how it ended, how the build up was, watching the fake, the so-called messed up recount or missed recount, and then leading up to watching it and seeing it did say, watching any of that match and how it ended, it was just like, do you really want to put a rematch like that on? I mean, WrestleMania was great. It had like, WrestleMania 1 was awesome. But when you figure when you want to have a rematch like that, you want it to have it top notch and build up to it. Not like, okay, it's network TV, let's just put it on there just to make a quick buck. But that could have been really big if they would have done it right. That's just my opinion.
So you don't call 33 million viewers on television doing it right?
Well, I mean, it's 33 million. Well, all right, let's put it. Well, maybe because I'm looking at modern day times and then compared to pay per view. But I'd rather.
Well, modern day times, Clint, in the modern day, the WWE would love to have that kind of viewership now.
They can barely get a million now.
Right? It's one of the reasons why they're moving to Peacock. Why they're moving the network to Peacock.
Yep.
So they can do more of these events with NBC.
Well, and Clemens got a point too, though. Because, yes, they drew 33 million, but there's a reason. Maybe there's a reason this is the highest viewed thing ever. And after that, it wasn't. Maybe people tuned in and they wanted to see it, but they saw the fucking finishes and they're like, this is bullshit.
He does have
yeah,
a point. Because, you know, people do like to see clean finishes.
Yes. So you're watching maybe a casual fan or even not, you're watching Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan on free TV. You miss WrestleMania for some reason. You're watching it on free TV. You're like, this is awesome. I can't wait to become a fan of this. And then you see all the fucking finishes and stuff. And I thought this was entertaining still, but I can see why people get upset by the finishes and all the bullshit. It's very this is a very WWF type show by the finishes.
Yeah, and that's one reason why I look at it. It's like, okay, it's for free network TV. Even when he had Saturday Night's Main Event when he brought it back in like the early 2000s. The first one was all right, and then it just started getting suckier right after it.
He's not wrong.
No, he's right.
See, here's the thing, though. Like with Saturday Night's Main Event, and I love Saturday Night's Main Event, right?
Yeah.
But we'll even go back to the month before. There were clean finishes, but there were also the finishes. It's just like, okay. They have to have something else planned here.
And the only clean finish you had got cut from the fucking show.
On here, yeah.
Eric,
I have a question.
Okay, ask your question.
Oh, my thoughts were it was okay. The WrestleMania match is probably better.
Ooh,
you think the WrestleMania match was better?
100%.
And which one was the real referee?
Dave.
Yeah, he's asking which one of the two.
They're both referees.
Well, they're both referees. The referee that refereed the match was Earl Hebner.
Yes.
Dave's twin brother.
But
he was
posing as Dave.
Okay.
Here's the thing.
And this is the debut of the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend, Earl Hebner, right?
Yeah.
One
because
of the greatest
referees. He was coming in because Dave was a referee for the WWF, but Dave wanted to stop refereeing.
Okay.
He wanted to stop refereeing. He was going to be moved into an agent role. And because somebody else, I think, was getting fired as an agent. We're going to move him into an agent role, but they wanted to keep a Dave Hebner. They wanted to keep Dave Hebner as a referee. Earl had been released from Crockett. So
Dave wanted to be an agent, but they're like, no, we still want Dave Hebner as a referee. He goes, well, I have a twin brother. And Vince's eyes lit up like a Christmas tree. So they basically brought on Earl Hebner had to be known as his brother Dave up until 1995. They didn't start talking to him until about 95.
Wasn't he Earl here? No.
No. They just said he's the other Hebner. And then they supposedly got rid of him. But basically, well, they took him off TV. Because they had Dave kind of finish up. And then, like, in 1989, Dave still, Earl started taking over as Dave.
Okay. Another question.
Is this, that this is a screw job finish. Bret Hart's in your main event, and this is the debut of Earl Hebner. Not trying to connect it, but just saying.
And technically, Bret was
the only one.
Because his mask got caught.
Yeah. They always find a way to fuck him over.
You hate him anyway.
So Earl was the one that got beat up by Dave, or was that the other way around?
No, Earl beat up Dave.
And that's how they knew that it was a fake referee. So
which I have no idea what. Okay. Which the crowd didn't get, because the crowd was cheering when Dave got beat up, because they thought that the...
Well, yeah, that's why Gorilla very...
That's what I thought.
He broke it down, too. Like, he said, oh, that's how he knows, that's how he knows. Like, he had to tell you.
It was Vince.
Oh, it was Vince, okay. But he had to tell you, pretty much.
Yeah.
He's like, that's how we know it's the fake, that's the fake Dave Hebner. Like, that's sure, the imposter.
That's how you
and I'm like, wait a minute. That's how you know? By the crowd going, by the crowd cheering the fact that the good referee got beat up? Because they don't know who the fuck that is.
So but Earl was the bad one at the time.
Earl was the bad one, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I gotta say, though, out of all the fucky finishes they've done, this is one of the most iconic.
Yeah.
It went down in history.
Yeah.
People still talk about it.
We're talking about it now.
Yeah.
I mean, said this was 3 years to the day.
Jesus Christ, we're getting old. I remember when this first aired.
You weren't even a thought. Mindy wasn't even a thought.
But,
I was an accident.
Anything else you want to touch on?
Wow.
Were you an accident?
Mom says no, but Dad never confirmed.
Okay. All right, let's move on.
So, anyway... My thoughts on this match are, this actually, I've seen this match so many times over the last week that, like, you know, you do get tired of it after a while. But still, this is one of those matches that, like, I can't believe they finally got the belt off Hogan. I mean, it was definitely iconic, and Andre was the right guy to do this with. Because it was believable that he could beat Hogan.
Yeah.
Well, if you asked me, I thought he could have won the first time around, the first at WrestleMania.
Always coming back with Andre.
Well, no, but it's still believable. I mean, Andre the Giant's a force. He was undefeated for, what, 20 years before that?
Yeah, about 15, 20.
So, I mean, it's definitely believable. How many stars are we giving this match, Clinton?
Well, I have to say I'll give it 2.5. It was a really letdown watching it.
Eric?
I give it a 2.
All right. Ducky?
They're boobs. Just because of what this match did for WWF programming, I'm giving it a 4. Storyline-wise and all that. I mean, I understand why I mean, I understand why, you know, Clint didn't like the match. Eric's just giving it a 2 just to follow with Clint. But this isn't the debate show. That's tomorrow. So, but before,
I thought it was a boring match. Other than the finish.
But I'm giving it a 4 just because of, like, everything that generated from it and the attention that
well, the thing is
garnered.
I'm going 3.5, too, because I got lost in the hype, to be honest. I didn't get let down because I thought the hype of it was all cool. It captured my attention for 9 minutes.
Yeah.
The whole thing, I mean, obviously this isn't going to be fucking Omega and Okada. Because it's Andre and Hogan. But
you think Hogan ever tried to lift Andre up for a one-winged angel?
Jesus.
Oh my God.
If he did that, then Hogan would be a one-winged angel.
Yeah.
But I just, the hype of it, DiBiase was in his prime here. DiBiase is an excellent villain, probably one of the best heels in the golden era, to be honest. The golden age, whatever the fuck we call
somebody
it.
Somebody better take note of that, because isn't that one of the questions tomorrow?
Who's the best heel in the golden age? No, it's the best heel of all time. Do your research. Ted DiBiase is one of the greatest heels.
Let me read the question for 10 seconds.
And Virgil was even coming into his own. You know?
Oh, God.
He's not yet to the point where he's buying you to or giving you money to take his pictures at conventions yet. He's not there yet. Right now, he's a blossoming young man. And Ted DiBiase was just so great in this role. He was the manager. He almost overshadowed everything else. He was so good to watch. You know, you believe him as this rich asshole.
And, I mean, even like a year later, the 1989 Royal Rumble, he bought the number 30 position.
Yeah. Like, he bought...
How much?
Obviously, he bought it from Slick, who, had Slick not gotten into the wrestling business, he'd be selling used cars.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, and you can always trust a used car salesman.
How much did he buy it for?
Bought the number 30 position, for Christ's sake, for the Royal Rumble. That just goes to show you that, like, he really took the character seriously because he was trying to buy everything. I don't know.
All right, moving on. Main event of the evening, even though obviously that was basically the main event. But now we have two great tag teams, one of the greatest of all time, against the Hart Foundation. Strikeforce, which is personally one of my favorite tag teams. I've always...
Oh, it's mine, too. I love that fucking song.
I've always talked about my love for Strikeforce.
Really?
Yeah. Because I'm a Rick Martel fan, even though you talk shit about him every chance you get.
I like them here.
You called him boring in the old school. And you said he was a boring babyface. This is babyface Martel.
Yeah, but the song really... this song threw me in. Which, actually, to be honest with you, the only reason why this team was put together is because they had the song in mind, the Girls in Cars song. They needed it for a young babyface tag team.
Yeah.
Or not a young baby, but like a babyface tag team that was going to be like attracted to all the girls or whatever. The girls were going to be attracted to them. And it was supposed to be Rick Martel and Tom Zink, the Can-Am connection. But Tom Zink said, fuck this, I don't want to be here, I'm out. And they were going to try to push the Young Stallions. But Paul Roman and Jim Powers hated each other.
Yeah.
So they weren't doing anything with Tito. So they asked Tito, they said, hey, do you know Rick Martel? He goes, yeah, Rick and I teamed in the AWA for a little while. He goes, okay, well, we have a song in mind. When we do the Pile Driver album, there's a song, it's going to be called Girls in Cars. We need a babyface tag team to have that as their theme song. We want Rick to be part of this babyface tag team. You're not doing anything right now. You're with him.
Was he El Matador yet?
No. So the only reason why the team was put together is so they have a team to put the song with. They were. It, to be honest with you, it worked.
And a very diverse team.
Yeah.
You got a French-Canadian and Martel and a...
Mexican and Tito.
Mexican and Tito.
Okay, and... Yeah, it worked. It worked, and they were all—they were both also friends. Yeah. So that's why it worked.
They were over too.
They were over until Demolition got to them, because then the fans realized, oh my God, we have there's this cool tag team that, you know, fuck these guys that want to, you know, fuck girls in cars. No, we want to be like these guys.
Yeah, we want to wear BDSM clothes.
It was in back then. That would not fly today.
Brandon, what did you think of this match?
The only thing I saw was a collar of it clipping out. That's all he had on the network. He actually cut it off. So I didn't really watch the whole match.
They showed the end. As soon as the cameras cut off, they did show Martel pinning Bret Hart.
That's the only thing you saw on the match.
Who won the match?
Strikeforce.
They
didn't even try to salvage this on Primetime Wrestling or anything. Like, they never showed the full match in its entirety on Primetime. Which sucks because on the next Saturday night's main event that they did the next month, it was the Killer Bees versus the Islanders. It was supposed to be a 2 out of 3 falls match. They only showed one fall on Saturday night's main event, but they showed the whole match 2 weeks later on Primetime. Yeah. Yeah, it was. And that was for the Islanders and the Killer Bees.
Well, we can't really give this match stars, right?
Not really. Because
it's not a full match. Both of these teams are great, and I'm sure it was great. I'm sure they could have done more great stuff. They worked together.
Is the match on YouTube?
No.
Not this match. The original match where Strikeforce won the belts is. The Strikeforce beat them. Right.
Neither of you saw the match before. The match available anyway?
No.
Just what they show on the net?
No, it got cut. It got cut from the live broadcast. It's kind of hard to save that. Final thoughts. And a show rating. How many stars would you give this show out of the show as a whole out of 5, Clintus? And your final thoughts, please.
I will give it 2.5. The build up, I liked the promos, the opening promos. He made it seem like it was going to be like just as good as main event, but with the match endings and everything like that, it really disappointed me.
All right, understandable. Eric, final thoughts and your rating.
My final thoughts: the build up was good. Andre versus Hogan sells itself. I give it a 3 out of 5 because it was Hogan versus Andre.
I'm gonna give it a 3.5 out of 5 because I did enjoy this. Obviously, it's not perfect. You can tell maybe they were even a little nervous because of all the exposure. Maybe so there were some hiccups in the show, but for a nice golden age show, I enjoyed it. Doug, we're gonna end with you.
Okay. So, this actually was not my favorite main event that they did. Like, of the 5 that they did. My favorite is the one in 1990. Because I do have fond memories of that. But I did like this event. And, it really did take me back. I mean, the opening promos, you know, at the beginning of the show, which I asked Eric to try to find, and he couldn't find them until 5 seconds before we went on air. Like, that stuff really did, because that takes me back to a time where I loved, I mean, I still love wrestling and all that bullshit, right? Fuck you. But I really
you.
Back then, okay? Because I didn't know any better. Still don't. But my rating for this show is going to be 3.5 because the Macho Man match was good. I mean, I get the fuck finishes and all that. I understand why people might not like that. To me, it was more about the show. That's what WWF was at the time. They were more of a show, of a television show. And that's what I kind of liked. I liked the storylines. I liked the characters. Of just keep me entertained. Yeah.
All right. That was our main event.
When's the next one? When was the main event two?
Here. You have anything else, Eric?
No, I was asking when was main event two?
Yeah, the next year.
Okay.
That's the one.
We can do that.
I'd love to cover that because that's when the Mega Powers explode, right?
Yeah, that's the match with the Twin Towers.
Where Savage turns heel. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
We'll do that one.
I mean, the anniversary for that was a couple days ago, so I don't know if you want to wait.
We'll do it at some point. All right, guys. Make sure to tune in to Settle in the Ring tomorrow at 9. And next week at 6:30 for Unscripted Wrestling on No Way Out 2004.
Yeah. And Eric.
Ooh, I can't wait to watch that.
Make sure Box gets us those answers.
Yep. I messaged him.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
If anything, Dan, you can mention him too if you want.
Okay.
Yep. Later, guys.
Later.
All right. Later.
See you tomorrow.
Yep.